everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the occasional male podcast series that I do with men who stutter. This is called He Stutters, She Asks Him. And you can find that on my blog, Make Room for the Stuttering, at stutterrockstar.com. And it's also freely available, as always, as a download on iTunes. So today I have the opportunity to talk with somebody who's involved in some pretty neat stuff that can help people who stutter. So I want to say hello, good morning to Andrew. Hey, how are you today?
Hi, Pam. How are you?
I'm good. I just got back from a very busy couple of days. I was at the National ASHA Convention in Boston. So I did a real short trip, a Thursday to a Saturday, and I'm exhausted, but happy that I did it and happy to be with you today. So I'm really happy that you're on the show with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And to get us started, could you introduce yourself to us? Tell us who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep busy.
Sure. I'm Andy Fitzenreiter. I live here out here in Seattle, Washington. I was born and raised in the Midwest in Ohio, and I've worked for the Seattle Police Department in the Identification Unit for almost 18 years. Wow. Time sure goes fast.
Yeah. So what is that exactly? So what do you do exactly in the police department in the ID, in the identification unit? What's your job?
What we do is we send booking and arrest information to the Washington State Patrol, and sometimes we do stuff involving mug shots and that kind of work.
So more
of behind the scenes stuff, and then we work with the people who do the forensics and the fingerprinting.
Oh, that sounds kind of cool. So are you considered civilian, or are you an actual police personnel?
We are considered civilian employees.
And is, like, a lot of your work, is it over the phone? Is it face-to-face? I mean, how do you actually, like, communicate your information?
We do most of it over the phone with various law enforcement agencies. If they call in and they say that they need a mugshot or something, then we send those to them if we have anything on file.
Okay. All right. And you know, I'm curious and also, I guess kind of like secretly impressed that you are in a job where you spend time on the phone as a person who stutters. So like, how does that go? Like, what's it like for you to spend a lot of time on the phone and stutter?
It's not bad. I mean, it's gone pretty smoothly over the years. I've always been very open about it. I advertise and disclose with the best of them.
Oh, good. So, like, you advertise, like, when you answer the phone, or like when you initiate a call, you let people know you're a person that stutters.
If I'm speaking with an outside agency or someone who doesn't know me already internally.
Okay. Has anybody ever been a jerk to you because you stuttered or blocked or something?
I'm trying to think. I don't think so. I mean, I've gotten a couple hang-ups, but then I've called them back.
Okay. Wow. You're lucky. I work in a school district, and often I'm asked to help cover the phones at lunchtime when the admins, you know, need to go to lunch on shifts. And so sometimes I do answer the phones, and you'd be surprised at the number of people. Like, I almost always stutter on the name of our school, which we have to answer the phone saying the name of our school.
Yeah.
And I stutter on it. So sometimes I have people, adults, who will laugh and say, "Are you sure you know where you work?" I'm like, "Really? Like, come on. Like, this is old now." You know, so sometimes I'm just like really, really surprised, because usually the callers are people from other school districts. And it's like, wow, you're in education and you're still doing something silly like that when you hear somebody that's, you know, maybe it's not obvious to them that I stutter, but anyway, you're lucky.
I think it shows you still how much advocacy still needs to be done in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So speaking of that, are you involved at all in the stuttering community? Do you do any advocacy work?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been involved with the National Stuttering Association for a long time. Well, actually even back when it was still the National Stuttering Project. So.
Oh.
So I guess I'm showing my age here a little bit.
Okay. Great. And have you ever had any speech therapy?
Yeah, I basically have had it all. Everything from trying to teach me to speak fluently, up to my most recent experience right now, which is basically just letting it all go and showing myself that I can tolerate some shame.
Oh, wow. Interesting. So, you know, when you talk about tolerating shame, it almost sounds like the therapy that you're doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, like, has some, like, counseling component to it.
In a way, yeah. I mean, I'm basically just going out there and planning to experience the worst thing that can happen. Mm-hmm. And it's so powerful when you purposely want to get hung up on the phone, or you purposely want to get a reaction from someone.
Mm.
because for all those years, that was like the worst possible thing that could ever happen in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, someone might laugh at me, or they might walk away. And but if you can turn that way of thinking around, and actually set a goal for that to happen, then that becomes a success instead of a failure.
Mm. So you've experienced lots of different types of therapy over the years, then, it sounds like?
Yeah. I mean, I've had everything from fluency shaping therapy, where the goal was to speak fluently, which is fine, but my own personal opinion is is the there can be a lot of danger in fluency techniques if you start to use them as a way to hide your stuttering.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does make sense, because actually I was covert for many, many years. And when I finally had a pivotal aha moment and landed in a speech therapist's office at the age of 41, they suggested fluency shaping therapy. And I quickly realized and like asked myself and then verbally challenged, why would you be teaching me things to just continue to make me covert? You know, like that's not what I need. So there is, there's a real danger to that, because to me, that's what it felt like. Like I've been covert for 30 years and couldn't stand it. And here I am, like I'm ready to be out, and you're suggesting I just figure out ways to keep it masked. So that did not work for me, because what I needed was to just stutter. And fluency shaping clinicians, they didn't really know how to deal with that.
I totally get it, and I wish I would have knew back then what I know now.
Isn't that always the way?
I mean it was fun to be fluent for a while, but then when the stuttering came back, then I was beating myself up for not being fluent, and I didn't really know how to deal with that, because it's almost as if the behavior of stuttering was even more reinforced as something that I should not be doing.
It's so complex, isn't it? This whole journey with stuttering, which for many of us, it's truly lifelong. So you're obviously a mature adult. You told me you've been working with the police department for 18 years. So as an adult, what made you decide to go into therapy now? Why are you doing it now? What's the benefit? Yeah. So you were saying the reason that you chose to go into therapy as an adult was what?
Well, I just feel like I had gotten to a point again. Where a lot of the fear and anxiety a little bit and the holding back with stuttering had returned to the point where I was avoiding words and situations again, and I was using some of my old tricks a little bit to not come across as a person who stutters. So yeah, because several years ago, like I said, I've had a lot of different kind of therapy, and after my experiences with trying to use techniques, I mean, you know, and again, as I look back, I think I was using them for the wrong reasons. I was using the techniques as a way to almost hide my stuttering. Well, if I use a technique here yeah, you know, maybe it'll sound a little bit prolonged, but maybe they'll, maybe my listener won't really think it's stuttering.
Ah.
Yeah, you know, it might sound a little bit different, but at least I won't have a real big block.
Okay.
You know, I mean, yeah. So then after that experience, I was actually living in Ohio, and I had found, a guy who, used to work with, Dr. Van Riper back in the day.
Oh.
Yeah. He was actually retired. And he was living in Ohio near where I lived. So I kind of worked with him every now and then. So that was my first real taste of the idea that I could stutter and still be an effective communicator, because I think up to that point, and I think still at times I kind of had that attitude. Well, before I can get on with the rest of my life, I have to do something about. I have to get rid of the stuttering first.
Mm.
You know, and then I can go do all the things that I always wanted to do in life. But we have to take care of the stuttering first. You know, so I had that experience, which was great. And then in 1998, I found out about the successful stuttering management program at Eastern Washington University, that was run by Dr. Dord Breidenfeld, and that was a wonderful experience. It was basically total desensitization, where we spent almost a month on a college campus, and for the first 3 weeks or so, we just went out to people. We went out and walked up to people and basically uttered our rear ends off. We were not allowed to do anything to help ourselves. You know, yeah, and if we had a 5-minute block, so be it.
Mm.
And yeah, so that was the first real experience I think I had of just, you know, being encouraged to go ahead and stutter.
yeah. So that was in 98, you said. So now it's, you know, 20 years later.
Right.
So, and you're doing something sort of similar. You said you're doing some desensitization and you're, you know, like feeling the shame and, you know, dealing with it. So, but it doesn't sound like fluency shaping that you're doing right now.
No, not at all. No. I'm working with the Vivian Siskin's program.
Oh, cool.
Called Avoidance Reduction Therapy. Yeah, and I wish I had found about this a long time ago.
Oh, wow. So, real quickly, because I want to move on to the other subject that I really want to get to, but tell me and tell the listeners, like, exactly what avoidance reduction means.
Sure. Well, and that's basically what it is you're doing those things and you're purposely entering those situations that you have fear about, and just going ahead and doing it. I had heard about Vivian's program before, and then I purchased one of the DVDs about her program from the Stuttering Foundation of America, and I was like, wow, this is some pretty cool stuff. I mean, it's going to scare the crap out of me, but I think I can do this.
That's awesome. And how long have you been doing it?
So I've been doing this since about January.
Oh, and, wow. Yeah. So almost a year.
Yeah. Vivian is in Maryland. So I do a Skype session every week with one of her clinicians who also stutters, which I love. Yeah. So I think he definitely brings his own personal experiences to it. And it's so cool to have our session together, and we're both stuttering openly.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool that you're able to have the session over Skype. You know, like, you can be across the country from each other and still be able to do this. So that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the same as having the group support, but she has a Google group that I can check in whenever I want, you know, or if I need a little bit of extra motivation and courage, I can always check in with them. You know,
awesome.
I'm out of ideas for phone calls. Do you have any?
Yeah. Awesome. And you know, speaking of phone calls, we actually, you and I, interacted a bit on a post in the Facebook stuttering community for a forum about phone calls. And you shared with me something that you've been involved in, some type of a service through Sprint, I believe, called Speech to Speech.
Yeah. Yeah. So
tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah. So about 20 years ago or so, a buddy of mine from college sent me an article that he had seen in USA Today about the service called Speech to Speech, and it was developed or founded, I guess, by a man, Dr. Bob Siegelman. He lives down in Sacramento, and he's dealt with cerebral palsy his entire life. And the older he got over the years, the more it affected his speech, where it got to the point where people were having a hard time understanding him on the phone, and so they would hang up on him because they thought either there was no one there, similar to stuttering,
or
they thought he was a prank caller. You know, and because his cerebral palsy affected his ability to type, he wasn't able to use a TTY machine that are used by the deaf and hard of hearing with the relay service.
Okay.
So out of his frustration and of talking on the phone and not being able to get his needs met on the phone, he went to the FCC and he said, "I have this idea about people who have speech disorders, but maybe are not able to type on a TTY machine." So basically, how it works in a nutshell, it's a very simple thing, is and it's available anywhere in the U.S. and a couple other countries to 24 hours a day, and I think there's even now the service is now available in Spanish also. Is you can dial 711 from anywhere in the country, and that connects you to a communication assistant. It's a live person who has been trained in deciphering all kinds of different speech disorders. And from what I've heard, it's a pretty intensive training that they go through. You know, and it's used by people with cerebral palsy or people who have had a stroke. You know, any kind of disorder that somehow affects our speech. And so then basically how it works then is you tell the communication assistant the number that you want to call, and they can either repeat as much or as little of the conversation as you want. So basically, when I use the service, I will tell the communication assistant to tell the person who answers the phone that I'm a person with a speech disorder. Sometimes it may take a little bit longer for me to get my words out. So if you hear a pause or something, it's not a drop call.
right. Don't hang up.
No, it's just me on a vowel sound. Getting stuck. So it's a really wonderful way to help advertise and close. Because I've had some times where I would call someone and I would get stuck on high or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person hung up, and so then I would call back using the service, and then after the person knew what was going on, they would, people get apologetic real quick. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't know what was going on.
Right. So just to clarify, because I guess I'm not perfectly clear. So you call the service and a communication assistant, a live person.
Right.
You talk to that person and say, like, hi, I'm Andy, I stutter, and I want to make a call to Pam. Can you explain to Pam that I stutter? I mean, is that what you do? Is that what it is?
Yeah. And it's whoa. One of those things where I have found where whoa, when the other person knows what's going on, you know, it makes it much easier to apply some of the skills and techniques that I've learned because it's out there. It's out there, you know, so I'm not trying to hide it. Whoa, which makes us stuttering worse because that's when I begin to struggle is when I'm trying to hide it and I'm doing everything I can to conceal it. But I've learned over the years that if I advertise and the stuttering is out there on the table, I've got nothing to hide anymore. So I can go ahead and I know in my mind that I can have a 5-minute block and it won't matter.
Okay. So the communication assistant just like does like the introduction and like does the like explanation, and then you actually have the conversation with the person that you're calling, or does the communication assistant do the talking?
The assistant can be involved as much or as little as I want him or her to. There are some people who may have cerebral palsy or something, you know, where their speech is very difficult to decipher. So the assistant will need to repeat every word that's spoken.
Oh, I gotcha.
But for me, I can usually have the conversation with the person myself, but maybe now and then I may have a good block, you know, and the person may not understand what I said. So I have the assistant on the line there who can tell them, you know, the word that I was trying to say. And
how would the communication assistant know what the word was that you were trying to say?
That's what they're trained in. You know, deciphering speech or I can also tell the assistant, hey, you know, if I have an especially troublesome word, that I'll be happy to go ahead and spell the word too.
Okay. All right. Wow.
Because I think the phone, because I've always thought this, you know, why is the phone such a terrifying thing? I mean, I remember those days, where I would drive a half an hour to the dentist's office to make an appointment because I could see them face to face. That's how afraid of the phone I was.
Oh wow!
And you know, and I just think it's because on the phone you don't have that face to face. You know, they don't know what's going on.
Right.
I mean, if I'm talking to you face to face, and I have a silent block, I mean, you know, the chances that they're going to walk away are still pretty slim, because they can see me standing there and they can see that I'm trying to say something. That you have that sense of nonverbal communication.
Right.
But on the phone, all you have is your voice. And I know for me, you know, I've always had much more anxiety at the thought of making a call as opposed to walking up to someone, because I know that all I have is my voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked to people who stutter too, and I've thought about this. You know, nowadays, a lot of businesses that I call, or like especially larger businesses, you know, a lot of the technology on the phone is becoming much more automated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now you have to go through how many automated menus before you even get to a live person.
Right. Yeah. You know?
And I mean, I don't know if you've had this experience much, but I've had some experiences where I get those automated menus.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get the word out, you know, in the two seconds that you have, you know. Yeah. So then you get the, I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. You know?
Yes.
Yeah. And so especially if you don't have the option of entering in your response on your cell phone, you know, so I think this service can be very helpful in that sense too. Yeah, because a lot of these automated services now, you know, I don't think they had stutters in mind when they designed.
Right, exactly. I am not a fan of Siri, because Siri will often tell me, I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Yeah.
And I'm very reluctant to use Siri anywhere publicly, or like where anybody can hear me using it. And if I stutter, I don't want Siri to say something back like that and have people be like, what, she doesn't even know how to use Siri, you know?
Right.
So I totally get you. I totally get you. One quick question before we wind down, because believe it or not, we're out of time already. So have you talked to other people who stutter who have actually used this service?
I have a little bit. But I'm just surprised, you know, at the number of people, especially in the professional community who are not aware of the service. You know, and I think I'm really trying to explain to people that the service is not a crutch. It doesn't have to be that. You know, times when I may use it, or if I'm having a bad speech day, or you know, or I really just don't feel like really dealing with it, but I have to make that phone call.
Right.
You know, I can't wait until I feel better physically, or when I think I might have more fluency. I mean, I think that it could really help a lot of people. I mean, even if they don't use the service all the time, just having that peace of mind that it's there if they want it. I mean, it's totally free. It doesn't cost anything at all. You can have it's totally confidential. I mean, I've used it before, you know, and given all my credit card information over it. It's totally confidential. But yeah, you know, so and I think it's a way to not avoid the phone. And I mean, you know, I mean, I've always been a big advocate of doing something for yourself. I mean, I hate the idea. I always hated the idea of having to rely on my family or friends to make phone calls for me.
Right.
I remember as a, you know, as a kid in college or whatever, well, when I wanted to call home, we had a payphone in our dorm.
Huh, yeah, I had that too.
and the only way to get through was, well, was I had to make a collect call, which means doing what? Saying your name and all that. So I remember having to ask my roommates to get me past the operator. And that was embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was always like a line behind you of other people waiting to use the phone.
Right.
And you didn't want other people hearing you stutter like that. Yeah, I totally get it. So, well, thank you for bringing this information to light, because I had never heard of it, and it's certainly an option for people that are interested in it. You said it's free, and you said you just dial 711.
Yeah. You can get more information about the service at www.speechtospeech.org. We are in the process of redoing the website. So, and then some other good resources are also www.sprint.sts.com. And then also www.hamiltonrelay.com. Sprint and Hamilton Relay are the two speech-to-speech providers.
Gotcha. Wow. Well, that was pretty comprehensive. Thank you for sharing all those website addresses. So if, like, I'm a Verizon user, that's my cell provider. So would I be able
that's
to
That's why
use
I have
this?
All cell. Hmm?
So you can still use it, even though it's a Sprint service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It doesn't matter who your provider is. Every state has a 1-800 number, or you can also just dial 711 from anywhere in the country, and then tell them that you would like to make a speech-to-speech call.
Wow. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing this in information today, and for, you know, sharing a little bit of your story and your challenges and successes with speech therapy, and just for being a guest today. It was a wonderful conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And whoa. One thing I just wanted to say real quick too, that I've learned over the last year is people still have this idea that we stutter because we're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. Because I mean, this whole time that I've been speaking with you, I mean, I've been stuttering, but I have no anxiety at all. So I do think that's one of the big things that we really, as a stuttering community, still need to work on. You know, I heard once the saying that that we don't stutter because we're nervous. We're nervous because we stutter.
Right.
And in a nutshell, that just says so much about just this, you know, about how badly we want to hide it and everything else, you know. And again, you know, it's just dealing with all that stuff that's underneath the bottom of the surface on the iceberg.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you just got the word out there, Andy. You definitely did your part to educate, you know, both people who stutter and people who don't. And again, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Absolutely.
You've really helped a lot of people.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks again for having me, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and go get some sleep.
Well, thank you. The same to you. And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.